Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraj. Purport. The servants of Yamaraj replied quite properly. They did not manufacture principles of religion or irreligion. Instead, they explained what they had heard from the authority, Yamaraj. Mahajana Jina Katasa Pantaha. One should follow the Mahajana. the authorized person. Yamaraj is one of 12 authorities. Therefore, the servants of Yamaraj, the Yamadutas, replied with perfect clarity when they said, Sushruma, we have heard. The members of modern civilization manufacture defective religious principles through speculative concoction. This is not dharma. They do not know what is dharma and what is adharma. Therefore, as stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, dharma projita kaitavatra. Dharma, not supported by the Vedas, is rejected from Srimad Bhagavat Dharma. Bhagavat Dharma comprises only that which is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavat Dharma is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja. One must accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender to him and whatever he says. That is dharma. Arjuna, for example, thinking that violence was adharma, was declining to fight, but Krishna urged him to fight. Arjuna abided by the orders of Krishna, and therefore he is actually a dharmi, because the order of Krishna is dharma. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 15, Vedas Chasavaraham Eva Vidyaha. The real purpose of Veda knowledge is to know me. One who knows Krishna perfectly is liberated. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 9, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Eva Yoviti Tatvataha Chaktva Tiham Puna Janma Nayatimam Iti Sorajuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his breath again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. One who understands Krishna and abides by his order is a candidate for returning home back to Godhead. It may be concluded that dharma, religion, refers to that which is ordered in the Vedas, and adharma, irreligion, refers to that which is not supported in the Vedas. Dharma is not actually manufactured by Narayana, as stated in the Vedas. Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam itad yad rigvedaha iti. The injunctions of dharma emanate from the breathing of Narayana, the supreme living entity. Narayana exists eternally and breathes eternally, and therefore, dharma, the injunctions of Narayana, also exist eternally. Srila Madhvacharya, the original Acharya for those who belong to the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, says, Vedanam pratamo vatta hariva yato vibhu ato vishnuat maka veda ityahu vedavadina. The transcendental words of the Vedas emanated from the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Vedic principles should be understood to be Vaishnava principles, because Vishnu is the origin of the Vedas. The Vedas contain nothing besides the instructions of Vishnu, and one who follows the Vedic principles is a Vaishnava. The Vaishnava is not a member of a manufactured community of this material world. A Vaishnava is a real knower of the Vedas, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Vidais Charasavayaham Eva Vijaha. Om Agyana Timidam Lasya Giranjana Salakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stavatam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakada Mahayam Tadati Svarabhadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Gayate Gayim Yakripa Tamam Bande Shandurum Dina Karinam. So, in conclusion, dharma. Religion refers to that which is ordered in the Vedas. And adharma, irreligion, refers to that which is not supported in the Vedas. Pramana or Amnaya refers to that which is heard and then repeated. And we see this principle in our education systems, where, for example, we learn our times tables. Everybody learned their times tables? Right? Ad nauseum. But there's a purpose. There's a purpose. Right? And we learn that purpose. You know, when I used to go to, when I went to school as a 5-year-old, I was given 2 shillings, 20 cents for my lunch. 20 cents. 20 cents for lunch. On Monday morning. Monday morning you were allowed to buy lunch because the baker hadn't baked his bread yet. Or you hadn't got it yet. We soon worked out we always went up to our 12 times tables. But we don't go up to 10, we go up to 12. And there's a reason for that, was because there's 12 pence in a shilling. Right? Now there's only 10 cents in a 10 cent coin, but the equivalent when I went to school was 12 pennies. And so that meant you had 24 pence in 2 shillings. Very important, because with 20 pence you could get an unmentionable pie and a cream bun, plus you would have 4 pence left over. Right. And of course that 4 pence left over was spent on sweets. So this is important. So very early on in life you learn the application of times tables, right? With money, we learn how to eat. So, but it's very interesting, this principle of hearing and repeating. It's rote, what we call rote learning. And you see it embedded in the Vedic culture. You see it especially in the education system in India, where there's a lot of, you absorb information, you repeat it back. And that's important. That's very important. But, of course, more important is the application of that learning. And so what you'll find in a modern, so-called modern, or often in an educational setting in a place like Australia, there's emphasis on rote learning, but there's also emphasis on analysis of that information and then a synthesis of all of that information so that you can use it practically. Right? So it's not always just a repetition of information, but it's taking that information and using it practically. What we call jnana and vijnana, which is part of the medical culture, it's a symptom of a brahma, is that they have the learning, but they also know how to apply it. How to weigh an elephant. Have you heard that story? I know the story about how to weigh an elephant. I think Prabhupada tells this story. As an example of this principle of application. So the workers wanted to weigh an elephant. They couldn't work out how to weigh the elephant. Right? So eventually the Brahmanas work it out. What you do is you put an elephant in a boat. Well, first of all, you measure the line of water, right? You measure the line of water where the boat sits. You put the elephant in and the boat drops. You then put the line, right? Then you take the elephant off, and then what you have a weight of that you know, you put it in, boom, 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 until the boat sinks to the level of the water, then you know how much an elephant weighs. So this requires application of, you know, physical physics, effectively. Now it's very interesting. You see, there is a lot of information in the Vedas, and a lot of it appears contradictory. There are different portions of the Vedas meant for different types of people. Right? So it's very interesting, in the beginning of the purport, what does Prabhupada say? Mahajana Jena Gadasa Pamtaha. One should follow the Mahajan. It's very important. So the Yamadutas are following the Mahajan, Yamaraj. They're his order carriers. They've learned from Yamaraj that you don't make things up. Right? And you take your authority or your practice from authority. So, you know, there are various prescriptions for all different classes of men. Prabhupada mentions how there's puranas for those in the mode of ignorance, puranas for those in the mode of passion, puranas for those in the mode of goodness. Right? So there are a variety of instructions, many instructions in the Vedas. You know, there's a Veda for extending life. Right? What do we call that? The Veda describes how we can prolong our life and live healthily. What's that called?
Ayurveda.
Yeah. But then there's also a Veda for hastening somebody's death. Right? What's that? Test for you. Dharma Veda, again, the art of warfare, which is basically kill the others. Right? So they're contradictory, but of course, according to time, place, and circumstance, they have their application. But the instructions of the Vedas have their application. And so we'll find Dharma Veda, Ayurveda, Vastu, all different prescriptions. We'll find Vedic literature that encourages worship of the demigods. We'll find instructions where, and Prabhupada quotes here, Dharma, what is it? He says, Bhagavad Dharma, right? Or Vedic instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate, what is it? Dharma, if you like, here is Sarva Dharma Parityagya Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Right? So that means give up all Dharma, give up all Dharma and surrender to me. Right? So the Vedic literature can be very confusing because there are many, many instructions that are given according to the audience, to the target audience, if you like. Right? But one needs to understand the Vedas through the right authority. In other words, one needs to, yes, we accept the Vedic literature as all being absolute and coming from Narayan, right? It's all from the breathing of Narayan. Prabhupada explains it's like the Vedic literature is like a manual which describes how we use the universe, how the universe is created, how it's maintained, how ultimately it's destroyed, how it's structured, and ultimately what its purpose is. And so there are many, many, many different instructions for many, many different classes of men. But the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to bring us to this point of knowing Krishna effectively. Vidas Chasavaya Hameva Virtue. The real purpose of Veda knowledge is to know me. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. One of the reasons why the Bhagavad Gita is such an essential, elementary book for the devotees, because really, in essence, Krishna is giving, you know, the basic principles. And it's very clear. Although even, you know, as Prabhupada points out, so many books written about, so many Bhagavad Gita's, and not all of them come to the point of understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And that he is a person. Which is a difficult concept for people to wrap their heads around, that the ultimate supreme entity, being, is a person. So, well, and you know, there are challenges, there are obvious challenges with that. You know, how can somebody who's everywhere and everything be a person? Right? For us, a person is limited, right? And our experience and perception of individuals, they're constrained within that form. Of course, but the Supreme Person is not constrained by the form that he presents himself in. He's multi. He can be simultaneously with a form and at the same time without one. That's just like, woo! And that's why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm a chincha, right? A chincha, inconceivable. Krishna mentions, I said, it's really not a seven, is it 7.5?
That's
not
the one. I think
it's the 9th chapter. Is it the 9th? You're probably right, 9th chapter. I just read it the other day. And Krishna explains how to meditate on himself, right? How to meditate on Krishna. And one of the things is that he's everywhere. And that he's the source of everything. All powerful. And that he knows everything is another thing, right? He knows everything. You know, and just think about that. Think of somebody who knows everything. That's why he also says he's inconceivable. Right? He's inconceivable. But he's a person. And when you think about these things, and this is one of the reasons why we need to regularly hear the Vedic literature and hear these descriptions, all of these characteristics of the Supreme Person or the original person, in order to get some conception of who God is and what he is and how he is. But ultimately to understand that his personality or his character is inconceivable. Inconceivable to us. And was another characteristic, luminous. What does luminous mean? Luminous.
Light.
His light. Yeah, we measure light in lumens. And he's luminous. That means he has light emanating from his body. That's a pretty far out person. We're all like we're walking around with light emanating from our body. Right? Who wouldn't want to be like that? Right? That's why he's attractive. He's attractive. He's all attractive. He's got somebody. He knows everything. He's the source of everything. Everything rests on him. And so we have to hear these things. We have to hear these things repeatedly to get an impression of who this person really is. The source of everything. He's an amazing person. Inconceivably powerful person. So there's so many instructions in the Vedas, and as I said, many of them contradictory, because they're meant for particular persons at particular times in particular places, and we need to know that, and that's why we need to follow the Mahajans, or why we need to have a spiritual master. Because in order to understand the application of all of this information, because remember, here it's been stated, this is all coming from Narayana. It's not something that is created or concocted, but rather it exists eternally. But another challenging idea or concept for people of the modern age. When you tell them, they say, well, where do the Vedas come from? I say, the Vedas don't come from anywhere. They have always existed. I say, what? How can something have always existed? Because our experience is, you know, things come into existence, they stay for a little while, and then they disappear. But with the Vedas and with the Supreme Personality, even with ourselves, we are actually eternal. Another feature of the Supreme, Sat, eternal. What is it? Is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Has not come into being, does not come into being.
For the soul is neither birth nor death at any time, not coming to being, is unborn, eternal, is not coming to being, eternal, unborn, and ever existing and primeval, is not slain in the body.
He's the expert of rote learning. Yes, thank you. Yes, it does not come into being, has not come into being, will not come into being, is always eternally existent. Now that's really hard concept for people to get their heads around. Because, you know, what do we see? Things come into being, they stay for a little while, then they go. This is our experience. Huh? Even the soul is present, but where is he? Huh? Where is he? There's a song by the Beatles, Lennon and McCartney, but actually by John Lennon. What does he say? He says, "I'm looking through you, but what do I see?" Right? Which is very much the challenge, you know, when I see you, who do I see? You know, when our grandma dies, we're all, grandma's gone. But you say, hang on a second, grandma's just lying on the floor, she just died, but she's there. Right? But we say, no, she's not, she's gone. So what is it that's gone? Right? It's not something that you can see, but you can see. I remember when my father passed away, and my brothers and I worked with my father, and it was interesting to know he was breathing, and then he just stopped. And then he breathed again a few more breaths, and he stopped. Another breath, and then gone. And then he wasn't here anymore. So So something, there's something, but we don't see it. Yet we do see it. We see the symptoms, Prabhupada explains, we see the symptoms. So, there are descriptions in the Vedas that explain all of these, all of the comings and goings of the material creation, the nature of the Supreme Person, the nature of the of ourselves. But we need some order or some explanation of all of this information. And so that's why Prabhupada mentions here, Mahajana Jena, Katara Sapanta. We have to follow the instructions of the authorities, of those who understand the principles and how to apply the principles. This is very important. Important for devotees too. Because we should understand the basic principles of spiritual life and then be able to teach them to others. So that, first of all, we get the benefits, but then also we're able to transfer or to provide that setting, right, that context, so that instructions which appear to be contradictory or difficult to understand or inconceivable, right, they're put in a terminology and they're put into practical application so that we can derive the benefits thereof. And so, you know, this is really, this is why we owe so much of a debt to Srila Prabhupada, why we honour him as our founder of Acharya, because Srila Prabhupada has taken the essence, right, the essence of Vedic literature, and has condensed that or provided that for us in a form in which we can understand the principles and then know how to apply it. And very often we understand that by studying his life. Right? We don't just hear his instructions, but we also look at how Srila Prabhupada applied it. Right? And Prabhupada was immensely pragmatic. Right? There's one time, you know, in Vrindavan, he was at they were having a program and they didn't have a mic stand, or the mic stand was broken. And there wasn't anybody to hold the mic, so Prabhupada told one of the devotees to take off their brahman and threaten to tie the mic So, you know, very practical. Very practical application of, you know, practical. So here the Yamadutas are explaining, here's how we present, or here's how we know and understand religious principles. Here's how we can determine what is appropriate and what is inappropriate, what is dharma and what is adharma. Dharma is that which is provided in Vedic literature. And our dharma, that which is spoken by the Supreme Lord. And why the Vedas are given so much importance and so much deference, if you like, so much respect, honour. Because they're principles that have been presented by the Lord, and they're principles that exist eternally. So that explanation is given by Prabhupada. Narayana is breathing, and part of his breathing is the words that come from his lotus mouth. And those instructions are basically meant for the benefit of everybody. By applying the principles that are spoken by Narayana, we can perfect, we can understand the purpose of life, really. This is the benefit of books like the Bhagavad Gita. At the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that one should have a mission. Right? Everybody should have a mission. We should know who we are, and we should know what we're supposed to be doing. Right? And the mission of life, if you like, is to come to the point of self-realization, to understand that we are not a product of the material entity, but that we are spiritual by nature. And that our actions determine our ability to know ourselves and to know that purpose, and then to act based on that understanding and purpose. And then the results, what results will we get? Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And this is the real purpose of education, basically, or the basic principles of education. Understand the principles, know how to apply them, and then know what the result will be when you do that. This is the real purpose of education. And we can do that by studying the Vedas under the authority of the Mahajana, or the spiritual master, the spiritual teacher. And so, when that process is applied carefully and appropriately, then what's the end result? The end result is that the end of this birth, we won't have to come back again. We can go to the spiritual realm. And how do we do that? By always thinking of Krishna. And how do we get to the point of always thinking of Krishna? Does anybody know? This is the Hare Krishna's final mantra. What is it? If you want to remember Krishna at the time of death, what do you do? Chant Hare Krishna. Go to the top of the class. Although I think everybody knows that. Our solution to all problems is chant Hare Krishna. If you want to distill our philosophy. But of course, and that's not so funny, actually. It's interesting. I keep on coming back to this point. There are five instructions or five verses given by Krishna at the end of the Brahma Samhita. Right? And there's a Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purport. It's very interesting. And he, what is it? Abhyasaya, which means, you know, the practice of yoga or the practice of sadhana. And he says that the knowledge that pertains to or is relevant to devotional practice is to understand the basic principles, what are called the Dasamula Tattva, if you like, 10 basic truths. And those 10 basic truths are all about sambandha, relationship, and I think three of them are about practice. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you know, that we study the Vedic, you know, life is a pursuit of something, right? And according to Vedic culture, it's the pursuit of knowledge, right? The pursuit of knowledge. And the most valuable knowledge is spiritual knowledge, not just, you know, one times two is two, one times, yeah, blah, 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 on and on, right? That's material information. Of course, we need to understand the basics of all of these, but the most important is spiritual knowledge. And of course, that's the knowledge of our relationship with the Supreme and our relationship with the material energy as well. And, you know, our relationship with the spiritual energy. For us, for the practitioners of bhakti, it means knowing the 64 items of devotional service as presented by Rupa Goswami, right? And the most important or critical for us is to know how to chant properly. Right, very interesting. You know, this is our chanting. The implication I got from reading this book when I read it, I've got a broken Brahma Samhita. You know how these soft bound books, we have, if you open them up long enough, the pages all fall out. And you know what the printers call this binding? You know what they call it? Would you believe? Perfect binding. That's what they call it. But it's far from perfect. That's about the best we fall apart. But certainly my grammar, some of these has fallen apart. But that's good, because what it means is I can just sit it on my dining table and leave it open at that point. Then if I want to go backwards or forwards, I'll just pick up the page and put it in. But it means I can leave it open and I just read when I'm having dinner or whatever. I can just... Because, you know, sometimes it's not easy to understand. You have to read it a few times to understand what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is actually saying. And this is how Prabhupada recommends. If you read something and you don't understand it, go back and read it again. Right? And that's how you learn something. So, anyway, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions there that, or this is my interpretation, my takeaway is that life is a pursuit, and we're in the pursuit of learning. And so, you know, we have Bhagavad Gita, we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever, but one of the most important pursuits for us is to know how to chant Hare Krishna. Right? And do it without offense, right? So that the full potency of the mantra purifies us. And so that, and we know, what Chaitanya says, gentle karpana marjanam, you know, we cleanse the mirror of the heart, of the mind, then with a pure heart, we'll see the reflection of our pure self in that, in the mind. But the mind reflects what it sees or what it's exposed to. Right? And has memory also. Right? The mind has multi functions. Just like the senses have memory and the ability to absorb or to gather information. This is what the senses are for. Gathering information. Which then gets, and the mind is the king of the senses, right? And so that information is stored in the mind. But when the mind is purified, because it gathers or stores information or reflects what it's exposed to, when the mind is pure, it'll reflect ourselves, who we really are. So, and that purification is done by chanting. And for us, the pursuit of knowledge is learning how to chant. So it's interesting. In the morning program, what has Prabhupada given us every day? Bahujan Makari Yani Swabana Kita Tabutana Paya Krishna Pare Premadam. What is it? Anybody who claims to be a Vaishnava? No, what is the translation of that verse? I say it every day. If you chant Hare Krishna, if you chant with offence, even though you chant for many, many births, you will not attain the ultimate goal of the chanting. Right? And so then what do we do after that?
Chant.
We chant. Yeah, but what do we say? After we've said that verse, what do we then recite? Ten offences. Yeah, we recite the ten offences. Why do we do that? Anybody know? Why do we do that? Why do we recite the ten offences? To avoid them. Yes, very good. So, you know, it's critical. It's interesting. It's critical to our making advancement. It's what we do. And this is what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says. And it's why we associate with devotees. One of the reasons why we associate with devotees. Because one thing we should all have embraced, well, we did at one point in time, I suppose, we embraced this notion that we're going to become, that we're going to chant Hare Krishna and do it effectively. Right? why we associate this with the Prabhupada is to get an idea of the Vedas, but the main purpose is to chant. We apply all of these other activities, but in this day and age, what is it? Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasyeva, 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 Kitiva, Nita. Which is one of the reasons why we always come back to, and I guess is my point, chant Hare Krishna. Right? But chant Hare Krishna properly with a proper understanding. Right? And of course that's why we study. That's a lot of our study of the Vedas, or study in the Bhagavatam, study in the Bhagavad Gita, is to learn how to apply the principles of bhakti so that it's effective in our lives. This is why we, a lot of what we're supposed to do. And to perfect the chanting of Hare Krishna. So, and that means, you know, yama niyama, in one sense. There are things we accept, things we reject. That's more or less the essence of what's been said here by Srila Prabhupada, is that there's dharma, that's what we accept, and there's adharma, and that's what we reject. We learn that from the Vedas. Because the Vedas are very cover a broad range of topics and subject matters, it's easy to get confused by the Vedas. And so that's why we have a guru, that's why we follow the Mahajans. And so why Prabhupada says in Mahajana Jina Kita Samanta. And there are 12 Mahajans. And so we follow the Mahajans because the Mahajans embody religious principles in practice, in action. And for us, you know, the main Mahajan is who?
The Guru.
The Guru, yes. And in particular, our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. And we apply his teachings. When we want to do something, we apply. And this is why Srila Prabhupada really appreciated his Western disciples. I'm reading Harisori's latest book at the moment about Prabhupada's final month that he spent with Prabhupada in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was entertaining a lot of people, or not, it wasn't entertaining anybody, he was just doing, he couldn't roll over in bed by himself. So very invalid at that stage. But he was meeting a lot of his godbrothers, and he was saying his farewells to his godbrothers, effectively, what was happening. But he was showing his godbrothers what his disciples were doing all over the world. And they were quite impressed. You know, they were showing pictures of Gita Nagari, they were showing pictures of Vrindavan, of the temples of the deities and the active. And they were really quite impressed. And then Prabhupada said about his disciples, he said, they're from a lecture of the Alana culture. Right? But he said, one good thing is they will do what I told them to do. Right? No speculation. Right? No interpretation. No confusion. Because they hadn't read the Vedas. They hadn't read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. They'd only heard Prabhupada's instructions. There was no, you know, other trappings of Vedic culture to confuse them. So they just, Prabhupada said, I appreciate my disciples very much because whatever I told them, that's what they did. And of course, these are the principles that we should follow too. Okay, any comments or questions? Anybody like to share any thoughts on this?
Prabhu, It's actually Yamadutas, they say like dharma, adharma, this above that is Bhagavad Dharma.
Bhagavad Dharma.
So this Yamadutas, what they learn from Yamaraj is about dharma, but it is not Bhagavad Dharma. So that is why these Yamadutas, they were confused, like they couldn't, they wanted to punish
Ajamil.
They wanted to punish Ajamil, but the thing is that they didn't know, like, you know, they didn't know what is Bhagavad Dharma. So based on dharma, they just saw that he did all abominable activities and supposed to be punished.
And that's a good point. You know, some people misunderstand the potency of chanting Hare Krishna and the power of chanting Hare Krishna. This is really, you know, this is the main point of this whole history of Ajamil. And so, you know, sometimes Prabhupada's godbrothers would criticize his disciples. Oh, no, they didn't go to... I had the story, there's a story of one devoted disciple of Prabhupada who was a draft dodger and eventually went to India to escape the draft. And he went and stayed with, in a Gaudiya month. Prabhupada encouraged him to. You know, if his shadow touched theirs, it touched their body, they would go and take a bath. Yeah. It's interesting to note the cause of contention between Prabhupada and his godbrothers. So there's this. And also, you know, other people, oh, they're just chanting Hare Krishna, oh, that's, you know, they're just chanting Hare Krishna. But actually, chanting Hare Krishna is super. It cannot be underestimated, the potency, and that's what we see here. Ajamil was, yes, a simple person, but he chanted without offense. And so this is the... And the reason why we're here at this point is because previously in the Bhagavatam there was a description of all the hellish planets, right? And where you would go if you performed all these sinful activities, right? So Ajamil, obviously he was off from, you know, wherever, one of the lower planetary systems for a bit of cooking. Cooking class with the other dudes. So, but he wasn't. The Vishnudas turned up. And the Amadudas put, hang on a second, he said, what's going on here? This is not right. According to our understanding of Dharma, you should be, you know, punished. But no, he was eligible for liberation, simply because of chanting the name of Narayana. And this was something prior to this point in time that the Yamadunas had not experienced. Yeah. So, yeah, good point. And it's the essence of this instruction, really. But again, right, Ajamil had to perfect the chanting, right? Perfect the chanting. Which is our task. Well, that's our task. He chanted and he got, you know, freed from all of his sinful reactions. But as Haridas Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani, that's not the real purpose of chanting. It's one of the side effects of chanting. But the real benefit of chanting is that you get love of Godhead. Right? And that you get full emancipation from this material conception of life. You get your pure spiritual body, right? So, Ajamil was free from his sinful reactions, but he hadn't perfected his spiritual life by coming to the point of full spiritual understanding of his, you know, original, his Siddhartha, which is what we should be doing, right? So, yes, we become free from our sinful reactions, That's a benefit, but not what we chant up and chant for. And of course, you know, we chant to be engaged in service effectively. That's what, and really the finer qualities, if you like, of a devotee are that he's a servant. You know, that's our dharma. If there's a dharma, and the chanting of Hare Krishna uncovers that, it's that we're a servant, and that we're a servant of God, a servant of Krishna, first and foremost. And understanding that service and being fully absorbed in that helps us uncover, or helps reveal, our spiritual identity, our spiritual personality. But of course, it comes, you know, as Prabhupada says, or one of the devotees quoting Prabhupada said, Nashua was one of them. He said, there's more comes out of a bean bag than just a finger. Right? Nashua.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I've got a burning question for you.
A burning question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking about punishment.
Punishment?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Krishna Buddhism and the
Buddhism. Yes.
It reminds me of something that I read recently. Other time I'll allow the voice. Okay. Alright, so it reminds me of something that I read recently.
Is that on? Do you know?
It's on the lower way.
It's not on.
Well, I see it very mild.
Yeah. Okay, all right, keep going.
So it reminds me of something I read recently in Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto that I found really hard to understand. And it's to do with the situation with Parikit Maharaj,
yes,
the encounter down the wall,
yep,
who was having his legs, you know, cut off by personality of Kali. And then in verse 117.22, it says, the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. Have you ever come across this before? I've never heard anybody.
But what did Prabhupada say in the purport?
Well, in the purport, yeah, obviously I looked at that. He talks about how Jesus Christ was crucified, but he didn't get angry at the mischief mongers. That is the way of accepting a thing either favourable or unfavourable, so from the both perspective, not to blame, finger point seems to be.
What's the number of that verse?
Mm-hmm. And then yeah, it goes, thus for a devotee.
What was it?
117.22.
117.22.
Yeah, thus for a devotee, but identifying is equally a sinner, which just really seems very hard to understand. So further than that, Prabhupada doesn't really unpack this statement.
Punishment and reward of Kali. Right?
Yeah.
22?
Yeah.
Oh, the king said, oh, you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of
the religion. And just to give you the context of this, it's really surprising. And I'm just surprised that it never stood out to me ever before, but it just did the other day. But just to give you the background of the context, just to remind you, remember, Parikit Maharaj comes along and he asks Dharma, who did this to you? How did this happen?
Mm.
And Dharma the Bull goes, well, the principles of cause and effect are all very good to understand. Some philosophers say it is this, and some philosophers say it is that. But he never says, this guy here, he did it to me. He doesn't do that. And so this is Parikit Maharaj's response.
Mm.
And it's been making my nerve a little bit for the last few days.
Yeah. I haven't studied this recently, so I'm not sure if I understand it correctly. A devotee generally sees himself to blame for his suffering. And so, if this is just a general, this is shooting from the hip, right? So, this is just my immediate response. And so, therefore, whether something good happens or something bad happens, the devotee appreciates that it's a reaction for their past deeds. Right? And generally, if something good happens, he accepts it as Krishna's mercy. And if something bad happens, he accepts that also as Krishna's mercy. And the person who may be the instrument of their karma is not ultimately the person to blame. Right? Because they're getting the results, the reactions, through the agency of that individual. And so they're the cause. The individual is the cause. So this is why I take it that Prabhupada mentions Jesus, because that's how he accepted his crucifixion. Huh? Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Right? Or words to that effect. So that's one way of understanding this point, that we don't identify the perpetrator, because the perpetrator is merely the agent of the other person's karma. Right? And so there's a deeper cause or a deeper understanding of action and reaction. And why we don't say these things, because ultimately we could say, actually, it's Krishna who's organizing all of these things. So what are you going to do? You're not going to blame God? Right? And a story that I've told many times over the last week or so, last few weeks. My mum was like that. I noticed that my parents, mum and dad, weren't going to church. Whereas when I was a kid, up until I was 15 or 30, yeah, about 15, would take us to church every Sunday, right? Without fail. And then in later years, when my parents were in their 70s, I noticed that they weren't going to church anymore. I said to my mum, why are you going to church? You used to go to church all the time. And my mother said to me, I can't, if God is all good, I can't believe in a God is all good because there's so much suffering. Which is a conclusion that people come to. Right? And I said to my mum, I said, but mum, you know, that's not God's fault. That's our fault for being rascals. We do the, you know, we choose the wrong things. Our dharma as opposed to dharma. So yes, that's a conclusion that my mother came to anyway. Oh, I can't believe in God anymore. So are we going to blame him for all the problems? Because he started Govinda Mari Purusham, right? Dhamaham Bajami, what is it? Sarvakarana Karanam. It's the cause of all causes. So therefore the devotee doesn't want to, ooh, hang on a second, I'm not going to identify who's the perpetrator here for various reasons. But ultimately, you know, if there's some suffering, or even if there's, we're getting the reactions of our past karmas. And so, in one sense, a devotee accepts the suffering, willingly, or not willingly, but
What was that?
He's accepting voluntarily.
Not voluntarily, no, because there's no choice. resignedly, you know, with acceptance, I deserve whatever I get. And what I get is a fraction of what I deserve. So, that's one way to look at it.
But actually, in Avanti Brahmana's story, yeah. Avanti Brahmana, 11th canto, 23rd chapter, very, very nicely explained the very same point about why we suffer. Like in Avanti Brahmana, Even though so many people insulted him, threw so much, spoke harsh words, did so much this thing, but still he thought that it is me, these people are only postman, they are delivering my karma, but actually it is me. It is actually, ultimately it is said that it is the mind. Manaha parama karana mamananti, it is said. The mind is the root cause that causes us all these problems, actually. Otherwise, actually, there is nothing that. So, the mind is the real that causes.
Well,
that's the conclusion in Avanti Brahma's story.
Yeah. Madhu Manjari.
I was appreciating your answer as a question from one perspective, from the so-called victim perspective.
From the which perspective?
From the victim perspective.
A victim's perspective, yes.
We can take that, it's my karma, it's Krishna behind. But from the, for example, in this case, the king, Parikshit Maharaj, his duty, his dharma, is to identify and make justice.
Yes.
So he has to identify who did the right and wrong thing.
Yes.
Because it's his position. So that is.
But it also, and you remind me, in this context, Kali has arrived, right? And these activities were unheard of in the kingdom. Right? They were unheard of. And so, but they herald the beginning of the age of Kali. Right? Now, who's responsible? You know, why? Because that ultimately is Krishna's plan. You know, Kali has to come. He's not going to say, you know, it's Krishna's fault. Ultimately. And why?
In this case, for example, the bull, because he was so-called beaten, he said, I cannot identify the perpetrator because it's not my position. My position, because if I have knowledge, I understand that he's just an agent of my karma, or there are laws of nature, the laws of nature, Krishna behind, so many factors.
Yeah, that's right.
That is the good perspective.
Yes, deeply persistent.
Yeah, but Parikshit Maharaj has different. He has to have a different perspective because his function is different.
In his case,
also the Yamadutas as well. Their position is different. They act in because their function is something different.
The job.
The Jamila is different.
Very good, very good. So, what's the conclusion?
I have one last question.
Well, it may not be the last question.
what would be required for us to reach the platform of perfect chanting?
Well, I'm working on that, so affectionately. What's required? It's very interesting. As recommended by Krishna, theistic conduct constant endeavor and what else is there? Well, that's good enough, I think. That's enough. That's a good start. Behaving properly and constantly chanting. Prabhupada mentions, I was reading in one of the books the other day, Prabhupada says one should chant constantly and incessantly. Right? So what does that mean? What does constant mean?
Always.
And what's incessant mean?
Don't stop.
So two things. Always chant, don't stop. I read that and I thought, oh, Krishna. I'm a lazy bum. Because, you know, we're tested, we'll be tested. And the testing goes on all through life. And sometimes we're left wanting. That's the reality. So therefore, you know, Trinana Bhishani Chinna Talori Vasakishnana Amana Dina Amana Dina Kitaniya Sadhari Prabhupada mentions. And there's anecdotal evidence of this, you know, this is one of the most important verses that a devotee has to learn, because, you know, of our pride and our misidentification with, you know, who we really are, we don't chant properly, and we stop chanting. We get distracted.
It's just, you mentioned in the beginning the importance of our purpose, the pursuit. If we have a clear goal, what we want, so focus-oriented, so then we will be able to do our purpose.
Yes.
Perform our activities because it's clear what I want, so.
Yes, but when it becomes clear that you want material sense gratification as opposed to Krishna, what do? You realize, I'm in the material world to pursue things other than Krishna. Then what do? You know what you do? Go back to the first instruction, chant. But then what happens is your contamination is revealed too, and that's a good challenge to purify the heart of material proclivities and attachments. And so, you know, ado shraddha, sadhu sangha, association of the devotees, bhajana kriya, follow the practices, ananta nivritti, overcome the attachments. And that's the science of chanting Hare Krishna, is to rid the heart, to cleanse the heart of those attachments. Huh? And you know, sometimes you're just not aware of them. And then later in life I didn't realize that I was doing this because of that. I thought I was a pure devotee. Huh? So, yeah, purification. And that's why theistic conduct, constant endeavor is required all the time. We can't rest on our laurels at any time and think that we've made it. We need to keep that analysis of motive, really, you know, personal motivation. And of course that comes with sincerity, which gets to your point, the purpose, the real purpose of why you're doing something. Huh? And for a lot of devotees, even though they may be material aspirations, material proclivities, it comes back to Prabhupada's their inspiration. And here's the reason why they do things. Or the devotees' association is the devotees, because the devotees then remind us all the time what our actual purpose is. That's why Sadhu Sangha is so important. Association of the devotees is critical. And asat sangha, we give up bad association. So, and again, that's theistic conduct. The right conduct, the right behavior, that means associating with the right people. And always analyzing and assessing our purpose, motives for doing things. And that's where the chanting of Hare Krishna comes in, because the chanting of Hare Krishna purifies our consciousness so that we can see our motives and our purpose for doing things, and helps to reinforce the pure spiritual identity, the pure spirit soul, if you like, our real spiritual identity and personality, which is to render service to Krishna, was a hoitikiya patihata, without motivation, without a material purpose anyway. So that instruction Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that, you know, one of our serious purposes in practicing bhakti is to learn how to chant and to use the chanting as a means of purification. And so that, you know, we're performing our devotional service because it's service to the spiritual master and it's service to Krishna without. And this is Rupa Goswami's instruction on the Abhidhasi Darshanyam. You know, without extraneous material motivations.
It sharpens the intelligence also, actually.
Sharpens the intelligence?
Spiritual intelligence.
If only I could take advantage of it. That's why we have to read the Bhagavatam every day. Why we have to hear the Bhagavad Gita every day. Why we have to chant every day. Come in? No? Anybody? Is that okay? There are more instructions, but I've forgotten. I haven't turned that page yet to get to the next step.
That's good advice. There's a good motive for us to keep chanting. The more we chant, the better we'll get that.
Yeah. Yes. And my experience is early morning chanting is probably the best. Chanting is good any time, but that's why theistic conduct usually means rise early chant.
Brahma Muhurta.
Huh?
Brahma Muhurta period.
Yes, yeah, because it's an undisturbed time of the day where you can reflect on just the mantra. And I just hearing the mantra there, that so much. What is it? Iti sodashatam nam nam kali gal marsha marshanam. So all of the contamination of kali is destroyed by the sixteen syllable mantra. Right. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that's a verse. Iti so dashakam nam nam kali galam ashanashanam. There's a bit more to it, but then Hare Krishna.
Mataha parataro upayaha sarva vedeshu drishyate. Mataha parataro, there is no other way. Even if you look into all the Vedic scriptures, sarva vedeshu drishyate. Even if you look into it,
yes,
can't find a
better. There's no other way. So, nasteva, 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 kitiya, nanyata. Yeah. If you're short of a sloka, then it's good to have. But, you know, main sloka is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If that's all you know, you're okay. It's good to have that knowledge. It's important. And of course for us, apply it especially in our sadhana. Okay, God Rajana Bhagavatam Kijo Jai 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 Jai